Thank you for downloading this Council on Foreign Relations podcast. CFR is an independent national membership organization and nonpartisan research center. For more information, please visit us online at cfr.org.
Good afternoon from New York, and welcome to the CFR Academic Conference Call Series. I'm Irina Faskanis, Vice President for the National Program and Outreach here at CFR. Thank you all for joining us. Today's call is on the record, and the audio will be available on our website, www.cfr.org, if you would like to share it with any colleagues or classmates. And we also have there a special discounted subscription to Foreign Affairs, if you would like to take advantage of that. We're delighted to have Bernard Gordon with us today to discuss the future of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Dr. Gordon is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of New Hampshire. He is the author of 5 books and a number of articles dealing with trade and foreign policy in East Asia. He has been a consultant to the National Security Council and the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and held multiple fellowships in the U.S. and abroad. Dr. Gordon is on the board of directors of the National Association of Scholars and for many years was a member of the Institute for Strategic Studies, earning his PhD from the University of Chicago. Welcome, Dr. Gordon. Thank you very much for being with us today. You authored a piece in Foreign Affairs. It would be terrific if you could get us started with an overview of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, talking about the countries that are involved in it and how it differs from other trade agreements.
Good. Thanks very much, Irina. This is Bernard Gordon, University of New Hampshire. And as you've just heard, I'm going to talk with all of you guys about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is known by an acronym. So the only acronym I think you need to want is TPP. Nobody in the United States has ever heard of it, but it is a very, very big deal. It's likely, if it works out, it's likely to become the largest open trade and free trade agreement the United States has ever been involved in. Now, I don't want anybody to bother memorizing or even attempting to memorize any numbers, but I want to tell you in one more time that the dollar size of the TPP is very large. Canada and Mexico joined in this past summer, and that brought the membership up to 11. And if Japan joins, and that's a problem, that's an issue I'm going to talk about a little bit later on, if Japan as well joins, American trade with the TPP would then represent 40% of global trade. So it's a big deal, a potentially big deal. On the surface, the TPP is a trade agreement, but it goes well beyond what we normally think about as trade agreements because its chapters, and there are 26 of them, they cover many wide-ranging issues. They cover small and medium businesses, state-owned enterprises, issues of government procurement, and here's a big one, issues of intellectual property. They will affect the Internet. And if it all works out, and that's not for sure yet, if it all works out, it will achieve a free trade agreement without any tariffs or other barriers within 10 years after it comes into effect. So that, I hope, gives you the size and the scale of what it might be. Now, let me say a few things about the history. The roots of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, are in 3 tiny nations, originally called the acronym, Singapore, Chile, and New Zealand. If you've thought anything about any one of those, you know they're all open, pretty much free trade agreements, free trade economies. And about 20 years ago, they got together, those three, to have an open trade agreement among the three of them. Again, Singapore, Chile, and New Zealand. But it's fair to say that of those three, Singapore was key and remains key. It's a tiny country, a very rich country. Its per capita GDP is bigger than ours. Some of you may have already been to Singapore. It's a fascinating place, always very friendly to the United States, even in the worst of times. Singapore was, for example, hosting U.S. Navy ships. But it was, and this is a point I want to stress, Singapore has always been strongly interested in maintaining and retaining United States involvement in it, in Singapore's part of the world, by which, of course, I mean East Asia, the Pacific, Southeast Asia, and so on. Now, that's the first part of the history. The second part is this, and it's a bipartisan history. In the last few months of the George Bush administration, the chief U.S. trade official was a woman named Susan Schwab. She's now at the University of Maryland. She became concerned. This was in the last months of 08. She became concerned that American exporters were becoming less and less involved in the Asia-Pacific region. If that was a period in which China was signing a lot of free trade agreements with small countries in Southeast Asia. And it was also, and I'll say this again later on, it was part of a period of China's so-called charm offensive. At any rate, back in 08, Susan Schwab, at the end of the Bush administration, expressed an official U.S. interest in the TPP. But when President Obama came into office in January 09, nothing much happened for about a year. And I wrote stuff about that. Other people did, too. And we said, there was no U.S. trade policy under Obama. But in November and December of 09, the president then expressed an interest. And in December of 09, the U.S. formally joined the TPP negotiations. Since then, the whole process has been taken over. Well, I don't want to say taken over. The U.S. has taken the lead in the TPP negotiations. They are tough, and there are many of them. There have been 14 negotiating sessions so far. The next one is in the 15th will be in Auckland, New Zealand. The U.S. imprint is very clear in terms of America's insistence, for example, on protecting intellectual property rights, and it's led to many complaints. The insistence on property rights affects pharmaceuticals. I don't want to get into the weeds on this one, but many poorer and developing nations worry and complain that if the American position on intellectual property rights and pharmaceuticals are included in the TPP, it will make it tougher and more expensive for poorer nations and poor peoples to get the most modern medicines. The U.S. denies that, but that continues to be an interest. Okay. That's so far as the history of the TP. What I want to do now is I want to identify for you three items in the political environment that involve the TPP that are surrounded and that concern it. When the TPP was first signed on to by the United States, there was no concern with the issue of, and here's a term maybe many of you guys have heard about, the term called the U.S. pivot to Asia. This involvement of America in the TPP preceded any issue of the so-called pivot to Asia. But there were people who worried in 08 and 09 and early in 010 that China was so-called excluded from the TPP. Hold on a moment. I want to get a drink of water. During that period, in the early years of the first decade of this century, China had been, as I mentioned earlier, embarking on a so-called charm offensive. It had signed a bunch of free trade agreements with several of the ASEAN Southeast Asian countries. But suddenly, in the late summer and the autumn of 2010, Chinese foreign policy seemed to take a sharp, hard-line turn. There were meetings among the Chinese and the Southeast Asians, and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was at one of those. And the Chinese began to take a very tough line in dealing with two major areas in East Asia. A bunch of you guys, I'm sure, have heard about the so-called Senkaku Islands. That's a dispute between China and Japan. If you haven't heard about that one, maybe you've heard about disputes in the South China Sea, where China seems to be asserting sovereignty over a large piece of the South China Sea that goes right up to the shores of the Philippines, includes parts of Vietnam's area, Brunei, Indonesia, and so on. During that period, in 2010, when China seemed to be dropping its charm offensive and taking a tough line, what happened then was that the others in Asia, who had been hoping to have a good, warm relationship both with China and the U.S., began to reassess their situation. And even, for example, the Philippines, which 20 years ago had kicked out the United States from its longstanding basis there, has now, in the past few months, begun to ask that the Americans come back. Some of you may know that a few months ago or a year ago, even Australia asked for 2,500 Marines to be based there. So the political environment was changing in East Asia from one that had been calm or neutral towards the U.S., hoping to be in between China and the U.S., to one that seemed to be more concerned or apprehensive about China and therefore warming to the U.S. That's the first of the three political issues. The second one concerns Japan. And the big question here is, will Japan join the TPP? Two Japanese prime ministers, the current one and his predecessor, have said yes. And the current prime minister, Mr. Noda, has three times told the world that he will soon make an announcement that Japan will join the TPP. He even told President Obama at one point. Each time, Noda has dropped the ball. And I think it's probably fair to say that the U.S. administration is a little maybe fed up or not. I don't know if that's the right word, but the United States would like to see Japan in the TPP, doesn't want to get involved in Japanese domestic politics, but the issue in Japan that has stopped the Prime Minister from making a formal announcement to join the TPP, the issue is Japan's agriculture. Some of you may know that rice in Japan, as an example, is strongly protected. It's about 800% higher in price than the same rice that sells in Hawaii. And the issue for Japan of the TPP is this. It would, if Japan were to join the TPP, it would mean, in effect, a U.S.-Japan free trade area. Americans, going from the times of Ambassador Mansfield 20 years ago, many Americans have long wanted that. Many in Japan have wanted that. But Japan's agricultural interests have so far blocked it, and they are powerful. Japan's prime minister now is at a popularity level at 20%. That's low even for Japanese prime ministers. And the problem is that Japanese prime ministers don't stay in office very long, usually not more than a year or two. So America's hopes for a big TP, one that would include Japan, are now stalled. There was a senior U.S. trade representative in Tokyo just a few weeks ago saying again, yes, the United States is very willing and anxious to have Japan join, but there's no, so far as we know, no progress really made. Japan's business interests, its industry, a bunch of its economists, all are for joining. But agriculture is dead set against it. That's the second of the three political issues. The third one is domestic. There has been a growing concern, and some of you who may have seen the article I did in Foreign Affairs will recognize this. There's been a growing concern in Congress and among some senior people in New Zealand and Australia that the negotiations in the TPP are going on entirely behind closed doors. Even some former U.S. trade negotiators say that they have never seen anything quite as closed as these talks. The U.S. trade representative, a fellow named Ron Kirk, says that's not true. He says that you can't negotiate trade arrangements in public because nobody will put their cards on the table. So, and he says that everything is as open as it's ever been. And in fact, the United States has been more willing in the past year or so to have what are known as stakeholders come to the TPP meetings, make their cases, but in reality, I don't think that there's been much of a major public input. And that is a problem because about two dozen American congressmen and senators have now gone formally on the record to say, and they've been led by the senator from Oregon, Ron Wyden, they've gone formally on record to say if the negotiating texts, the wording in each of the 26 chapters are not made public, they're not going to support the TPP. So that's where we are. It's a big deal. It's a potentially massive deal, but we don't know where it's going to go. My last word will be this. I think that regardless of how the election would have come out, whether Mr. Romney would have won or the president, as we now know, has won, I think both would have proceeded further in the early months of this coming year with TPP. But there's no way to know what will happen in Japan. And I, in my own view, if Japan doesn't participate in the TPP, it's not a big deal. If Japan does participate in the TPP, it is a major, major big deal. So that's what I'll say up to now, and I'll be happy to open it up to, and talk with you guys about any questions anybody has.
Thank you. At this time, we'll open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the 1 key on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our first question will come from the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M.
I just had a quick question. This is Dr. Will Norris. I'm a professor here at the Bush School. Without Japan, how big will the TPP be? You mentioned with Japan, we're talking about 40% of global trade. Without Japan, what's that number look like?
It drops down. Oh, I had those numbers. I mean, the Japan, of course, is the world's, as you know, Professor, Japan is the world's third largest economy. So even with the inclusion this past year of this past summer and spring of Canada and Mexico, which was a big deal, but the size will drop down to, my recollection is, but I don't want to swear on this one, it drops down to be about 5% of U.S. exports without Japan included. That's why Japan is such a major, major factor. The U.S. already has, as you know, free trade arrangements with both Canada and Mexico. So in that respect, the TPP would not represent a major change. The big gorilla in the room, in my view, is Japan's membership.
And just a follow-up question: do you have a sense for the possibility of China's involvement in the TPP? I think that the standards are probably going to be higher than the Chinese have an appetite for politically. But
I think you're completely correct. I my view on this: I've been at meetings in Washington since this whole thing started being talked about in 08, 01, 09, and even then. The spokesman from Beijing and Shanghai were coming in and saying, aha, this TPP is aimed at us. At a point when there was literally no overt, and I don't think any serious political commitment in the U.S. to China being involved or not involved. But the issue really is the level of standards. The kind of a free trade agreement that the TPP represents and its model, and here's a good point for everybody to recognize, its model or the template is the U.S.-Korea agreement of last year, what we call the CORUS. That is pretty close in its particulars to what the TPP would aim to be. And the standards are very, very, very high. Some of the U.S. trade negotiators have referred to both the Korea agreement and the possibility of the TPP as a gold standard free trade agreement. China is not likely to be even able to consider those things because of state-owned enterprises, government procurement issues, and there's no indication of any interest on the part of the Chinese in changing their trade policy in ways that would allow for membership.
Great, thank you.
Next question. Thank you. Our next question will come from Ohio State University.
Hi. I was just wondering, like, what are your thoughts on China's response to Japan's possible participation in the TPP, and how will that affect Japan's decision as to whether they participate in negotiations?
Good question. Very good question. China has been moving in the past half year to a new alternative. There's an acronym which I don't remember, but I don't want to even bother you with. But it would be a China-Japan-South Korea three-way arrangement designed clearly to draw Japan away, and probably Korea as well, away from the TPP thing. There's clearly a growing, or maybe I should say a latent competition between these two concepts, the one of the TPP on the one side, which is already more or less up and going, as I say, 14 negotiating sessions, and this just beginning notion of a China-Japan-Korea. But the current talk in Tokyo is so suspicious, and has been for the past year, of China, and getting worse because of the Senkaku's disputes and so many other things, that I don't think that there's any realistic, in my view, it could be way off on this, but I don't think there's any realistic possibility that Japan will be joining in a China-based arrangement. It's a tough issue because, as you know, the trade of all these countries with China is number one. And yet the willingness of getting more tightly linked in with China at the expense of losing the connections with the United States are something that I think will not happen. I think the draws of the United States involvement are too large and politically have been reinforced by the Asian reactions to China's having dropped its charm offensive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone. Our next question will come from Georgetown Law Center.
Hello?
Yes, I'm on. Good morning, Georgetown.
Yes.
Okay.
Hi.
Introduce yourself.
Yeah, this is Rudin. I'm from Law Asia of Georgetown University Law Center. I have a question relating to the state-owned enterprises.
Huh.
I'm wondering what are the current rules or what are the current progress in the negotiation about state-owned enterprises, because this is like a huge issue in Asia. And that would the rules on state-owned enterprise will definitely influence on the response of Japan and also the potential response from China. So I'm wondering, do you have any opinion on the rules of state-owned enterprises?
Yes, a very good question. It's not so much an issue with Japan because there are a few other than in the Post and Telegraph and insurance, but it is a very large issue for Vietnam. Vietnam is a member of the TPP negotiating process, and the issue of state-owned enterprises is a big, big stumbling block. Within Vietnam, and I don't know whether your country originally is in Vietnam or Northeast Asia or not, but within Vietnam there are many, many debates going on about the propriety of the very large role of the state-owned enterprises. The TPP proposals, although we don't have open public text, so we don't know for sure what is being asked for, but the TPP proposals are to subject the state-owned enterprises to market forces as if they were not state-owned enterprises, and that has caused some in Vietnam to be apprehensive. On the other hand, in Vietnam, I know that there is a large body of thinking that is upset in general with the state-owned enterprises for reasons of corruption, concentration, political power. So they are not always well-liked in any case. But to answer your basic overall question, the issue of state-owned enterprises is one that will, if I understand correctly what's happening in the negotiations, over the 10-year period, the state-owned enterprises will be subject to the same kinds of market forces that all other market-based economies are familiar with.
Okay. So you mean they're going to be subject to the similar rules, as same as all the other companies, other...
Yes, and that is an absolute requirement for the TPP. New Zealanders, obviously the United States, Chile, many others would insist upon that. So that the and the only case we know for sure that is causing a problem is Vietnam, because Vietnam is a member of the TPP. So that is a tough nut, but my hunch is that Vietnam will, over the 10-year period, once the negotiation is signed, Vietnam will resolve those issues, because it is a major obstacle towards the development of a very open economy. And with 90 million people in Vietnam, that is the direction they want to go.
Yeah. Do you think transparency will be a really big problem? Because the transaction between the government and the state-owned enterprises are usually on the table. So we cannot get information about the transactions between them, and you cannot, like, subject them to proper rules, as same as the other. Yeah, so transparency seems to me a very, very huge problem.
I agree. And where is your country originally?
China.
So you understand the issues in China, and as I say, in Vietnam, they are already facing these issues, because there is much pressure in the negotiations on the issue of the state-owned enterprises in Vietnam. And the issue of transparency is absolutely central. And the overwhelming majority of the TPP members, the Americans, the New Zealanders, even the Peruvians, and certainly Chile, they will insist upon transparency.
Right. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Dr. Gordon, can you talk a little bit about what this agreement, the negotiations, mean for the U.S. economy, both if they're successful and if they do not go through?
Well, if they're successful, it will be a massive development. There have been a couple of good, solid studies, and they project, the largest gains, actually, the largest gains are not for the United States. The largest gains are going to be for the Asian countries, but the United States itself will experience, from the most recent estimates that I saw, over a 10-year period, probably a doubling of our exports. But the larger beneficiaries will be Vietnam, Malaysia, I believe, certainly Singapore is going to be a major gainer. But for the United States, it will be, now let me be more concrete and specific. One of the major concerns of the TPP is to incorporate the exporting potential of small and medium businesses in the United States. And what do we mean by small and medium businesses? Normally, that means enterprises with fewer than 500 people. And so many American firms have opportunities to export their products, but they have been unaware of the complexities and the difficulties and the problems involved. And one of the major emphases in the TPP is a separate chapter on what are called SMEs, small and medium enterprises, with efforts being made to help smaller firms, smaller exporting firms. And we see them here in New Hampshire. There are companies here that make metal products that are exported to Asia, but they see larger opportunities. They need assistance from probably governments to learn better ways to deal with how to become involved in the export market. And that's one of the major emphases of the TPP, a separate chapter on small and medium enterprises. Does that go to part of what you're asking about?
Absolutely. Let's take the next question.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Mesa Community College.
I'm not hearing anybody now.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay.
Is the TPP trying to reach out to countries like Thailand and Indonesia or other Asian countries? And then if so, what are the, you know, what is the process or what are the holdups for that?
Good question. That's my own favorite original area where most of my books and work have been in Thailand and Indonesia and so on. And yes, the issue is being discussed in both Jakarta and in Bangkok, let me say first with regard to Indonesia, obviously a very rapidly growing economy, but I don't believe that there's yet a willingness to open the economy in terms of what I talked about a few minutes ago about state-owned enterprises and the heavy involvement of government in the economy. I don't believe that there's any present likelihood of Indonesia becoming involved. That's very, I'm hoping that Indonesian specialists will have a better handle on that, because I think with the size of the population of Indonesia, it would be wonderful. But I don't believe that the economists in that the political leadership and economic people believe that the economy there is yet ready to make the kind of major jump into an open trade agreement that the TPP would represent. Thailand is more openly discussing issues of TPP, and there's some discussion going on even within the last several months. I don't believe there's any major change happening, but they are clearly discussing it, because the Thai economy, as you know, was badly affected by the storms and so on last year, and it needs to be thinking in terms of things that will make sure that it is involved with the other Asian countries. That's the same situation with the Philippines. They are aware of the TPP. They are tempted by it in many cases, but there are lots, and probably at the present time, too powerful obstacles to make the shift of the kind that Singapore and New Zealand and the U.S. and Chile made. I hope does that answer part of your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question will come from China Partnership of Greater Philadelphia.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi. I have a question regarding what you think are some of the implications of the TPP for areas of sustainable and clean technology and for sustainable and clean tech cooperation.
Uh-huh. Not my strong suit, but go ahead. Okay.
Well, I'm just kind of curious about, I know there's a lot of buildup in the United States, especially under the Obama administration, for sustainable and clean tech mandates. And there are also countries in Asia that have similar mandates under their own governments. And I'm wondering, with a trade agreement such as this, how do you see that, especially with regards to intellectual property rights, how do you see this sort of helping or hindering that process of developing clean and sustainable technology?
Yeah, this is not a field that I especially concentrate on, but I know that the support in Congress and some of the resistance and worry in Congress about the openness of the negotiations is both propelled by and in some cases strongly motivated by people who have an interest in the most emerging and modern technologies. And the political support for TPP in the U.S. Congress will not be there if there is any indication that sustainable, or I don't want to use that word, that environmentally acceptable technologies are not clearly covered in the TPP negotiations. Mm. There's a strong interest in that subject within New Zealand, within Australia, certainly obviously within the United States and Canada. So on balance, I think I would have to say that people who have a powerful interest in ensuring that green technologies are fairly treated in a trade agreement, they will have a very powerful voice at the table in the TPP. Clearly, the interest in Congress would support that. And the Senator Wyden's involvement in Oregon is one indication of that kind of interest. So my hunch is that for people like yourself for whom that is a strong interest, I think that the TPP is a good development, but it'll find resistance. And that's why the whole process will require a 10-year period from the time the agreement is signed until everything becomes implemented, so the people will have time over a 10-year period to adjust and meet the needs. One last word on intellectual property. That has been probably the single largest open stumbling block because of opposition in Australia, New Zealand, and many parts of the United States, concerns about the restrictions on the Internet, copyrights, book publications. There's a very large movement to ensure, for example, the American Library Association, a very powerful group, all university libraries, they put their oar in and strongly wrote to the president last February saying that if there wasn't complete openness on the Internet and intellectual property issues, they wouldn't be backing the TPP.
Mm. Interesting. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Our next question, please.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone. Our next question will come from the Georgetown Law Center.
Hi, hello.
Hi, good morning. Good afternoon now.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Alex Wong from Georgetown University Law Center. I have a question about the trade relationship in Southeast Asia. As ASEAN has proposed a plan to establish a regional economic cooperation relationship, a partnership, which was announced just days before. Do you see that partnership is compatible with the TPP, or they are mutually exclusive?
I'll be very frank. So far, and I have been studying ASEAN since before ASEAN was called ASEAN, when it was even called and I'm sure you probably know this history, when it was at one point called ASA, the Association of Southeast Asia, and then it later on became ASEAN. So that's an area that I'm very familiar with, and I've tried to stay familiar with it. But to be very frank, the efforts of ASEAN to promote genuinely significant regional economic cooperation have not been very impressive. And as a result of that, I mean, I know that their goals are there. They have set out very ambitious goals. But so far as we can see from what has presently been achieved and from what the states within the region, specifically, for example, Indonesia, Philippines, to some extent Malaysia, what they've been willing to put on the table as compared with what they have not been willing to put on the table. They have excluded dozens, scores, even hundreds of items from their willingness to have open trade. So that kind of a background doesn't persuade me that the regional economic agreements within ASEAN are going to be, in any sense, an obstacle to TPP. TPP has, as I said earlier, a so-called gold standard. Very high standard, maybe very too high, but that's the standards that are being negotiated, and the ASEAN present level of economic cooperation is not anywhere near that level of integration.
Thank you.
Dr. Gordon, the next round of negotiations will be, I believe, next month in New Zealand?
Yes, in Auckland.
And can you give us a flavor of what you expect from that round?
Well,
you had a ball to look into.
Oh, crystal ball. Well, I mean, it's odd. It's interesting that it's going to be held in Auckland because that has been the center city of The law school at the university there has been the center place of much of the most open and drastic opposition to the TPP from the outset. So I think that the local environment for those meetings, it would be fascinating to attend those. But, okay, I won't say more because who knows what will happen. But my hunch is that the issues that are going to be emerging are especially one that I've not identified so far. Australia has raised major objections about investor rights and has even gone so far as to say that if investor rights overrule domestic rights, that Australia will not be willing to go further in terms of participation in the TPP. Chilean negotiators, even some of those directly involved in the TPP negotiations, have said almost the same thing. They have said that if some of the intellectual property and investor dispute issues are pushed too hard in the way that the United States wants, that the Chileans said several months ago, they will have to raise the question whether the TPP is worth it for them or not. So it could be that the Auckland meetings are going to see some fireworks. But at the same time, the press for staying on target and completing something is very, very, very impressive. The number of people involved that each of the governments has assigned to these, the Australians, the New Zealanders, the United States, of course, and all the others, is so impressive that it strikes me that there is a willingness to push forward and to get something done. So maybe there will be fireworks. I'm sure it will be more on internet issues, especially pharmaceuticals. The investor issues that I mentioned, those are going to be big problems that I believe will emerge in Auckland, or not so much emerge, but that will resurface.
And with the now, as we've all seen, President Obama was reelected. Will that continuity help those negotiations?
I think yes. I hope I said at the beginning that I thought that there were reasons. Whether Governor Romney were elected or the president reelected, there were reasons to be actually very hopeful. We're going to have a new U.S. trade representative. Ambassador Ron Kirk, has made it clear that he wants to leave office after one term. And I think that the likelihood is that trade policy, not early in this coming year of 2013, but by middle of the year, that trade policy, I think, will again emerge because it is such a major goal for the U.S. economy and for the U.S. foreign policy in terms of making absolutely clear that the United States is an Asian-Pacific country, always has been, always will be, that the TPP is such a clear manifestation and reflection of that long-term U.S. interest, that I believe that the president will resume the interest that he had 2 years ago, and that I can't say that I know this for sure, but I think it's been stymied by the Japanese unwillingness or inability, I should say, to go forward. Once the Japanese get their act together, and I hope that will happen, but there's no way to predict that. But my hunch, yes, is that the president's reelection will, within 6 or 8 months, help move the TPP process with more energy than it has seen for the past year.
Terrific. Any last questions?
Yes, ma'am. It looks like we have one more question from the China Partnership of Greater Philadelphia.
Okay.
Great. Terrific.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Because I come from China, and I know that China is still wondering the real American intention.
I'm sorry, say the last sentence again. I didn't hear the last sentence.
China is still wondering the real American intention. It seems that U.S. is using the TPP as a tool, as a part of its Asian-Pacific strategy to contain China. Do you think it is right?
No, I'm really glad you asked that question. Really, really happy that you asked that question, because that suspicion has been there from the very beginning in China, when the TPP was really not even, I would say maybe in Washington, D.C., there may have been 30 or 40 people who even knew what the TPP was. And we had visitors from China and from Beijing and Shanghai who said, aha, this TPP is aimed at China. Well, that really took the Americans by surprise, because at the time when those comments were being made, the TPP was altogether in the hands and in the minds of people who were in trade, completely and totally involved in trade matters. They understood that there was a political environment, but they were not the political people, the military people. They were the trade negotiating people. And they had no anti-China or contained China or anything of that sort of thing ever in mind. As I said, when Susan Schwab, the former U.S. trade representative under President George Bush, when she first said that the United States should become involved in the TPP, that was in the last months of 2008. And at the time, her interests were entirely in terms of encouraging American exporters to become more involved in Asian and Pacific trade. What she saw, insofar as China is concerned, is this, that the countries in Asia, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Philippines, all were trading, which had been trading so heavily with the U.S. and Japan, were reorienting their trade much more to China and to some extent Korea and Japan. And she was concerned to get Americans aware and awake of the opportunities for all American firms in East Asia. And it wasn't a political matter, and I do not believe it has been to this day a political matter, although nobody can deny that everybody is aware that there's a political context.
So is it safe to assume that this is another element of the re-election of Obama that might actually help the process as opposed to hinder it, given the anti-China rhetoric from the GOP? Or do you think that's something they're even focused on?
Well, no. Please state your question again so I understand it clearly.
I'm wondering if you think, given what you were just saying about how this is not a political issue, is this another element of what you were talking about the Obama administration being reelected, that this will actually help the process of the TPP as opposed to hinder it, given that the Republican Party tends to have a slightly more anti-China message?
In rhetorical terms, yes. In rhetorical terms, yes. Although if Governor Romney had been elected, I think he would have gone the same direction that President Obama has gone. Our China policy has been very carefully calibrated. Both countries know that it's an economic partnership of immense importance. But I guess on balance, I would have to say, yes, I think that you're on the right track. Insofar as, and I think Chinese reactions to the election, as far as I've seen this morning, are saying that President Obama is being seen in Beijing and Shanghai as the lesser of two evils. So in that respect, the TPP is probably has a better prospect under Obama than it might have had under Governor Romney.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Ms. Saskianos, it looks like we have no further questions at this time.
Okay.
Great. Dr. Gordon, this was a terrific discussion. Thank you for your comments. Is there anything you would like to wrap up with?
No. I guess only one thing. I hope I'm right in thinking that two things that I don't know but hope for. One, that Prime Minister Noda and he's got four or five guys in his cabinet who are smart young guys. They're all under 50 or 51 or 52. For Japan's politicians, that is kindergarten age. And they are smart. They've got graduate training. They are strongly in favor of the TPP. They have been stymied by a bunch of guys. I met them in Washington last year from the Agriculture and the Fisheries Ministry. They are really literally sticks in the mud on this, but they are enormously powerful. My hope is that the new processes, and there's a potential for a breakup in Japan's political parties, but my hope is that traditional powerful Japanese economic interests will prevail, because they've made steps designed to satisfy the agricultural people's worries. That's another big topic. Obviously, you don't want to get into that now. But the people who are pushing TPP in Japan know that Japan's agriculture has to adjust. And they put aside plans to give agriculture monies and other ways to resolve their issues. So that's my main reason for hoping that Japan will get involved. The other reason on the U.S. side is that I think President Obama is clearly aware of the significance of TPP for the United States politically as well as economically, and that as he gets settled in for his second term, that this issue will again absorb his attention and we'll see progress later on this coming year.
Well, thank you very much for today's discussion. And if for those of you on the call for your questions, if you haven't already done so, I hope that you will read Dr. Gordon's foreign affairs article, Trading Up in Asia, and that you will join us for our next call, which will be on Thursday, November 29th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Tara Lawson-Reamer, CFR's Fellow for Civil Societies, Markets, and Democracy, will discuss opportunity and exclusion in the global economy. So I hope you will join us for that. And thank you again, Dr. Gordon.
Okay. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this Council on Foreign Relations podcast. For additional audio, video, and transcripts of CFR meetings, as well as expert analysis of international news, please visit us online, cfr.org.